the official podcast of The Next CMO, hosted by Plana. My name is Kelsey Kraft, and I am the Senior Marketing Manager.
And I'm Peter Mahoney. I'm the founder and CEO of Plana.
For this week, we have Rachel Champagne and Frank Days as our guests. Rachel is the Marketing Campaign Manager, and Frank is the Senior VP of Marketing at Enterprise. Happy to have you guys on board.
Thanks for having us.
Nice to be here.
Yeah, welcome, guys. And this, by the way, this conversation was inspired by a great discussion that I had with Rachel and Frank on a part of a marketing networking group we call Any Excuse that brings together a whole bunch of marketing execs around the Massachusetts area. And they talked about an interesting thing they just went through where they had to transition their physical user conference, which is a big keystone event for them, for Enterprise DB, to a virtual one with everything going on, with limited travel, with the pandemic going on at this point. And they responded amazingly. We learned a ton from that discussion, so I thought it would be great to have Frank and Rachel come on board and talk about their experience in a little bit more detail. So that's what we decided to do. So maybe to start, it would be helpful, Frank and Rachel. Let's ladies first. Rachel, give me a little bit of a sense of what you do at Enterprise DB and just a little bit about your background.
Yeah, for sure. Sounds good. I've actually been with Enterprise DB for a little over 2 years now, working both on events and on demand generation and ABM specific campaigns. But really within the last year, I've transitioned predominantly out of events and into purely demand gen, with the exception of helping produce our annual conference, Postgres Vision. I worked actually in print and direct mail at Vistaprint for a few years prior to this, and then a smaller healthcare IT startup after graduating from Bentley University in 2013 with a degree in marketing.
Great. Excellent. Well, welcome again. And Frank, you know, you don't have to start from birth, but and I know you've been around like me for a little while, but give us a sense of what you've been up to for the last several decades.
Yeah, no problem. And yeah, I lead the marketing team at Enterprise DB, and it's been 2.5 years ago that I joined the company. I joke with people, I started really as an individual contributor leading the product market, what was all of product marketing. And then over the past 2 years, kind of slowly picked up a little bit of responsibility here, a little bit of responsibility there. The CMO departed. And then over the last year or so, kind of picked up the rest of the marketing team. We are, again, a global team. We've got 18 people scattered across Europe, as well as a handful of people in the Asia Pacific region. So I was on the phone last night at 10 o'clock and then this morning at 7 a.m. All the hazards of working with a global team. Prior to joining the team at EDB, I was with a series of venture-funded software companies, a couple of small exits, and one running out of capital, kind of realized I wanted to look at something a little bit bigger and a little bit different size and shape. Being in a private equity-owned company was a different adventure. We went through a transaction a year ago, which was kind of nice, where the company got sold to one group of private equity firms to another. I still need to work, so it kind of tells you how that worked out for me. But it's been a great opportunity and an excellent team. And I've been lucky, really. You know, Rachel joined the team a little bit after I did in a different part of marketing. And we've all kind of got the band together over last summer and kind of merged it all together. And it's been pretty awesome to kind of put together a team out in the suburbs, which I think rivals most of the kind of cool hip teams that my friends have and people in the city. We've been pretty fortunate that way. That gives you a quick snapshot of what we're up to.
Great.
Yeah. What does Enterprise DB do?
Sure. So we are a company that's focused on an open source database called Postgres. And our business is about, we sell software, professional services, and technical support for people who are using this open source database. Our kind of positioning is that we help companies get more out of Postgres. You know, while we are a software company and we do license an advanced version of the product where we add some enterprise class enhancements to it, the core thing is, again, since it's an open source, open core product, many people, including Enterprise DB, contribute to it. So we have a number of competitors, including some of the large tech companies like Microsoft and AWS that are a part of the project and we collaborate with. Our business, we've got 375 people worldwide. And it's you know, it's a growing business. This past year, we grew over 50% year over year in Q1.
Wow, that's great.
And it's you know, it's still a strong business. You know, I think that despite, you know, going off on a quick tangent, I mean, despite all the challenges with the pandemic that everyone's facing, our business still continues to be strong, knock on wood. And we're enthusiastic about the future.
Yeah, and obviously being in the world of open source is all about community. And so I imagine that this is a pretty important kind of event for you guys.
Yeah. And for us historically, you know, this is our fifth year doing it. And, you know, I joined the company in 2017. So this would be the third one I've been involved with. And it's always been a challenge because, to be honest with you, it's been an event where last year was the biggest year ever, but we got to 350 people. So on the one hand, we did it as a very detailed, a very high end, high touch, you know, really, we spend a lot of money on the event. It's not a break even endeavor, you know, but while it's a open source community oriented event, it plays a little bit more like our Enterprise DB customer user conference.
Yeah. And I'd imagine an event of this scale, because maybe not everyone who's listening understands what goes into this, but I imagine this is probably a seven-figure kind of gross investment to produce something of this scale, right?
Not quite that high, but yeah. But you know, approaching that.
It feels like it though to the participants, yeah, right?
It does, and you know, there's real business benefits in doing this kind of conference because there obviously you have your customer base that comes back and participates, and we do a lot of, you know, ask the experts, meet the pros, meet the key contributors to the open source project. There's a lot of, you know, pressing the flesh and meeting people and meeting the famous people in person. But then there's also a lot of the thing that I kind of underestimate is how many prospective customers came to the conference to figure out, were we for real? You know, we had a number of people who became customers. And when I look at my attribution model, this event is, of all the events that we've historically done, is one of the only ones that had a strongly positive ROI, like $2 to $3 of new ARR attributed, you know, for every dollar we spent on the conference. So it's a no doubter for us. And, you know, our CEO, it's a no doubter for him because I think he feels like he really wanted it as something where, you know, positioning it as an opportunity for us to represent, maybe to look a little bit bigger than we are and to do that. So, you know, when people walk into the room and it's lit up like Fenway Park and there's like loud blaring rock and roll music coming in, you know, just really provides a feeling to your customer base and to your prospective customers that you're really looking for.
It really, the intimacy kind of the event makes people feel important. As Frank referenced, like meeting experts and things like that, people come to the event and know it's not as big as a Microsoft or an Amazon event, but what they do get the opportunity to do is to meet with some of the key contributors of PostgreSQL. Bruce Momgen, Dave Page, Robert Hoth are big names that these people they're like the celebrities of the open source world, and they get to sit down and talk one-on-one with them. And that's something that our conference offers that I don't think is necessarily present at a lot of the larger scale conferences.
Well, that's great. So they get to rub elbows with sort of the star power in the enterprise open source database world, in Postgres world, which is exciting. And just to give us a little bit of sense, is it a multi-day event typically that you do, Rachel, single day? How does that work?
Yep, it is a multi-day event. We've always started it with a training day, which is on the Monday. It's only to about 50 people. People can sign up for that in advance, but the main conference is usually the Tuesday, Wednesday, full days of keynotes and lightning talks, breakout sessions, networking events, panels. So it's a full 2 days.
So this is a big thing. And I think a lot of us have been faced in the marketing world with rejiggering our plans and canceling events here and there. But if it's often, you know, a little customer seminar or something like this, this is a huge undertaking. So I imagine that a couple of things. One, how long in advance did you have to deal with this? And then what were some of the things that you needed to consider when you went from a relatively short period of time from planning a pretty big in-person multi-day event to converting it to something that was digital?
Yeah, we had to pivot pretty quickly. The good thing is I started reaching out to platforms as soon as we were kind of sitting down to like, all right, there's a pretty good possibility that this event may not be able to happen in person. So started reaching out to some platforms, and one of their questions was, when's your event? And when I said, June 22nd to 24th, they were like, oh, that's awesome. You have so much time. They were like, this is a dream for us, because they're getting people that are coming to be like, our event's in 2 weeks, our event's in a month. And so thankfully we have the time to pivot. It was kind of a process as well. I mean, we committed to using a hotel in downtown Boston, and we'd signed a contract. So it got into that. We were working on, scheduling different parties and all these things that we had big ideas for our in-person conference. So it really took kind of a pivot. And then once the decision was officially made, the contract was signed with the platform, it was kind of all hands on deck. Let's go. And all the app promotion we've done before, we hadn't done a ton, but we'd done some. So we had to kind of make sure that we were letting everyone, all of our databases globally know that, we are still having our conference. It is still going to be on the same dates, but we're taking it virtual.
Yeah, and give us a sense for Frank or Rachel that sort of the, you talk about these platforms. What type of platform are you dealing with when you're trying to host an event like this? I assume it's not just sign up for FaceTime or Zoom and go. It's something that's much more sophisticated.
Yeah, it really varies in terms of what you're looking for. And you could do it. We've seen examples in this when we were evaluating where people would build their own web page and kind of put up all the content of it. We picked a platform by a company called Intrado, which is as you would envision, it's a trade show in a browser, basically. And it's got, and I joke with Rachel about this, is like every time we ask them a question, how do you do birds of a feather? How do you do a lightning talk? How do you, we'd ask them all these things that you do in the real world. And Rach, they answered pretty much every question, right? I mean,
yeah.
It was incredible. So I give them a ton of credit, and they've been very consultative, and they really are on top of all the details. So at the point that Rachel was, making is they were like thrilled when we told them we started this, I think in late February, it became pretty apparent that we were going to be in a bad way in terms of the timing. And as I think I mentioned to you, Peter, last time we talked, we don't have a choice this year. We had to do this event. We're doing a rebrand, and we're launching a couple of new products. So I had a new website where I have a couple of forcing functions of things that my board is expecting us to deliver upon. And, that's why we were kind of like, okay, this is going to happen no matter what. So we were all in. And we were lucky when we shopped around at these platforms that, the other part of it was very interesting. And Rachel was just trying to get people on the phone with some of these companies, and they're all getting bombed. I think, I think they're all getting crushed with the flow of everyone trying to do what we did. So,
yeah. With that being said, with all the changes you had to make from in-person to digital, did you change the pricing for, these users and sponsors that are taking a massive hit from this?
Yes, we did. We actually were offering the conference to users completely free. So that's going to be a driver that we think we're really excited to do, because there's no reason why these people shouldn't sign up. If they have any interest in participating in any of the sessions, it's free. They can come join us at any point throughout the conference. And on top of that, the amount of registrants that we're going to be seeing for our free virtual conference, where you don't have to travel anywhere, right, or, stay at a hotel or anything like that, versus paying $300 or $400 or $500 plus travel and committing to being in Boston for a couple of days, we're expecting a huge jump in registrants and attendees. And from a sponsor standpoint, we kind of looked around. We got asked Intrado for some different samples of sponsorship prospectuses that they've seen from companies they've worked with, and tried to find a middle ground. We're not looking to charge sponsors an arm and a leg for this. It is great visibility, but they are still a little hesitant, and we assumed they would be. So we really did cut our sponsorship fees by about 60 to 70% for our three levels.
Yeah, but you're giving them a ton of value, right, Frank? I mean, you've got, it sounds like, right? Yeah, you've got a much bigger audience, which is great for your brand launch you're talking about. And I assume you can do some pretty cool immersive stuff for sponsors too. So it seems like it's probably a pretty good deal for them.
It's an interesting, you know, it's still, we still have to resell it. I mean, look, we had a handful of sponsors who were, we had one top level sponsor who was about to hand us a check for a lot of money. And we, you know, was about to sign the contract and we told them not to, and they held it. And now we're trying to you know, we've got to resell the value. In retrospect, maybe we should have, you know, maybe my honest approach was not to my advantage, but we basically resell it. We have to resell the value a little bit with that. But unfortunately, that's an important partner of ours and they're not going away. It's just trying to sell them on the top sponsorship rather than maybe a different one. But yeah, it's just a different thing. And you had to, you know, Rachel and I got, we had one person who sent us a contract and they signed for, you know, I think it was a 10 grand one. And we're getting on the phone with them tomorrow morning to kind of resell it. And their irony is that was a bit of a swap with someone else who's doing a conference and they took theirs live as well. So we may compare notes with them and kind of figure out what we can learn from it. So.
Well, that's great. So, and I think you're doing the right thing by, which is not surprising knowing you a little bit, Frank, that you're going to do the right thing for the long-term relationship with the partners, which is the smart thing to do.
Our sponsors are all business partners. They're all people we have long-term relationships with. It's just much easier to do that. And I think they're going to end up better off in the long run. It's just, it needs to be really clear. And, you know, it's the challenge. Like, for example, the question we got this morning with our partner team, because our partner team's going out to try and help us, partner marketing team's trying to help us bring in some partners to be sponsors, is, do we have pictures of what the booths are going to look like? Do we have, you know, what are the details of what I'm going to get? And Rachel did a good job on the prospectus, but there's still, you know, it's a whole different thing. Like, people know what a trade show is. They know what a conference is. It's pretty clear. Like, when you say it's a live event, here are some pictures from last year's event. Great. When we're trying to put together like a sizzle reel for this year's event, what do you do? Like, you can't take last year's a picture of our CEO or your picture of me on stage at that event talking, or, you know, those in context pictures don't mean anything. So we're trying to, you know, it's really, if you think about it as a unit, it's such a different animal that it really changes a lot of the things you do.
Yeah. It's interesting, Frank. And one of the things we talked about when we had the discussion back a couple of weeks ago with this group for the first time about this topic was, do you make it look exactly like the physical event except digital, or do you do things that are different? Because like you said, everyone's used to a physical event. They have that sizzle reel, they have those lights and gobos on the stage, and they do all that stuff, and this is different. It's a digital world, and I imagine there might be some advantages that you'd see from a digital conference. Have you tried to sort of integrate things into the conference experience for the attendees that might be enhanced because it happens to be digital?
Yes, there's definitely some things that we're trying to implement. Nothing's been completed right now, but we have our list of needs that we actually ran through with the vendor before we even chose them. A big thing is making it very interacting for the people that are attending. We're going to be having polls they can participate in, Q&A with the speakers, trivia, surveys. They can actually go up to different sponsor booths, have communications, download handouts. And so we think basically, and what we're trying to do is to encourage the attendees to participate in the polls and the Q&A and the trivia, is that when they participate, they're going to be getting points towards badges. And so at the end of the conference, or maybe at the end of each conference day, the top leaders on the board, and everyone's going to be able to see the board also. So you'll be able to see where you are and see who's in first place, second place, third place. We're going to be doing prizes for those people. So I know people come to conferences and all they want is their swag bag. I've already gotten email requests from people. And so we're like, you know, we're not going to do swag. It's going to be crazy expensive. We have such a global audience. Shipping anything would be crazy. We'll probably consider some, you know, little e-gifts and things like that that can be sent digitally. But on top of that, we'll do some larger prizes for people that are really interactive in our conference. And all the while, we're getting that analytics in the background. We're understanding the questions that they're asking, who's asking the questions, what they're interested in, and we're getting all that information.
Yeah, and did you try to find a way to incorporate either networking or fun into the event as a digital event?
We're still working on that. Attendees they have the ability to interact. They have group chats where they can interact with one another in the exhibit hall and throughout the time of the conference. One part that we really will miss from the in-person event is we have, a kickoff party and then a party at the end of day one in the exhibit hall with fun food and drinks and games. And that really is something that we're going to miss this year. We're trying to find a way to maybe bring some of that to this virtual conference. So it's a work in progress. At the very least, they're going to be able to interact with each other on that level. But I do think that that's something that a virtual conference will somewhat lack when comparing it to an in-person conference.
Yeah, makes sense. When you looked at the when you were planning this, are there things that you learned? Are there traps that you encountered that you hadn't thought about before? Because one, this may be a pretty big scale conference like this that you've done, and you had a super short period of time. So for other people who are looking to do this, any key points of advice that you have?
I think I just make sure that you're looking at a number of different platforms. Don't just go with the first one you're looking at. Know what's important to your conference, what features you need. Do you need the interactive exhibit hall, where people are actually walking around? Do you need a big theater stage for the keynote? What's important? And make sure you're asking all of those questions to the different vendors you're talking to when figuring out who to go with, so that you're on the same page, they know what your priorities are, and they can help you create each of those features throughout your conference.
Yeah, I mean, whoever you work with is going to be a partner in your conference. There were a couple of different approaches we could have gone to with the vendor we chose, and we ended up, we were thinking about hiring an external event manager, and then we ended up using a lot of the project we bought a bunch of hours from the platform vendor for project management, and that's, so far Rach has been great, right? I mean, they've been really good. Mm-hmm. So, and they feel like a real partner in the process. It's like any good sales process. We got it down to two vendors, and I don't want to disparage the other vendor, but it's a well-known, the other one was a well-known vendor, and the sales rep was difficult. Is that a polite way of saying it, Rachel?
That's difficult. A very nice way of saying it.
Difficult is a polite way of saying it, as a really generous way of saying it. And then the sales cycle was painful and really bad-mannered. And then after we closed with the other vendor, they came back and started talking smack and really, they continued to disparage the vendor we chose. And we're like, okay, great. I feel really good about the decision I made because I don't want to work with people like that. I'm just not interested.
Yeah, I've come to see that a lot of people are either, on one side of completely cooperating or just trying to make your life difficult. So you got to go with the ones that are trying to make your life easy.
Yeah, well, it was it was the classic. In this world, the margins are really good. And mm-hmm. Some people are trying to position themselves upmarket, and they started at 3x what we wanted to pay, and then when they found out who we were working with, all of a sudden their price came down to about the same. And it was just, we're not buying a used car here.
Yeah.
This is, I'm looking for a business partner to do an important event for us. I don't want to get into, those jokes about the government that this rocket ship was built by the lowest bidder. I don't want to get into this. I don't want to get in late in the process and find out that I don't trust the person I'm doing business with.
Yeah. Is there anything, fundamentally different that you're planning since it's become a digital event?
I don't think there's a ton different. We've actually decided to not do the training day as part of the conference, and that's going to be separate and run by the training team, probably on a different platform. But fundamentally, I think predominantly the same. Frank, I don't know if you have anything else to add to that.
The big addition is we decided to add a few tracks based upon geography. So we're going to have an EMEA track where we're trying to put a few talks, maybe couple of German talks, a couple of French talks, and put it on their time zone. And the same thing in the Asia Pacific region. We've done historically really well drawing crowds from Japan, Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Korea. So we are planning right now to try and get some tracks over in that part of the world as well. And that's going to be a little more work because we got to find the speakers, but we want to try and put it on their time zone with a couple of local language speakers. Going to be a little more work, but we think it'll help us draw a better global audience.
Yeah, and you'll also have great evergreen localized content that you can use, which is, it's one of the huge advantages of doing an event this way, of course, is that you often have literally by doing the event, because it streams through all these servers, it's capturing it, right? So there's nothing extra to try to produce stuff if it's already just part of the system. And I assume that the event site is even live for a while, right? Is as long as you want. So you still have access.
The contract right now is for a year, but that could be always extended. Different companies can choose to have their contract for as long as they'd like with their vendor. And yes, the event remains live on the site and data is still getting collected. So not only did in previous years, we recorded our keynotes, but breakout sessions were not recorded. And that was what made up a lot of the content in our conference. Additionally, we didn't find a really good way to track who was attending each session, the keynotes or the breakout sessions. And so we didn't know who was interested in what topics the most, which talks got the most attendance. And so going virtually, we're able to track who's attending each session, how many people are attending each session, and kind of put together the pieces of, all right, this is what they're interested in, and not just at the physical event on June 23rd and 24th, but for the next year, we're able to see who comes in and watches.
That's really exciting. I hadn't thought about the second part about that trackability as much. I know I experienced that first thing where I can't tell you how many conferences that my teams have run over the years where you have to make those tough decisions about, do you want to send a production crew and recording equipment to every breakout? Little do you know, like you said, that's often the most relevant stuff that they do in these breakout sessions. It's very product specific, kind of technical stuff sometimes, but it's the kind of thing that is sometimes the most valuable content that you get into.
It's valuable for us, and also for all the attendees are asking for it after the conference, and we're like, we can share the slides with you, but like we don't have the recording.
Yeah, and we have the fancy video from the keynote speaker, right? But we don't have the other stuff typically. I'm thinking, Rachel, that after this experience, especially because my view, and I'd love your view on this too, Frank, is that this method of running events like this is going to kind of stick, right? I think you're going to see more and more digital events just because people are getting used to it and people are developing deeper expertise. And it sounds like you signed on a really great partner to help produce the event with the platform all integrated. But the nice benefit is that you're going to have someone in Rachel who just totally gets this and has a lot of experience of running events at this scale. So do you expect you're going to continue to do events in this mode more, Frank? And do you think sort of the world writ large is going to do the same?
I guess, you know, we have to actually do the first one to see how it goes. But we, you know, we have if you think of this as sort of like an oversized webinar, we have a legacy of doing quite well from that standpoint. Any given random webinar for a company, we can get between 800 and 1,000 people. We have a really strong house list and there's a lot of interest in the Postgres community. Going forward, I've been having some conversations with my team in the Asia Pacific region about, like, I was in Singapore last October doing a partner day. There's no reason why we can't do a partner day. I think they prefer to do it in person, which I would prefer to do it in person as well, because I like to find a reason to get over there and meet everyone. Because as you know, when you go to those faraway regions, you meet people and you learn things you couldn't possibly learn by being, you know, here in the US sitting behind your desk. But as I was trying to convince them to think really hard about, we had a partner day that we were planning for India, for example. And we were originally planning, it was going to be an in-person event probably in around and about the, you know, May, June timeframe. Obviously that's not going to happen in person. I've been trying to get the team to think a little bit more critically about it and ask if we can in fact do this as a virtual event. So, you know, right now it's a change of mindset. Some regions, I've been told some regions in Southeast Asia, they don't like webinars. So this is what I'm hearing from my Asia Pacific team. I don't know if that's in fact true or if that's the partners, because the partners want to control the situation. But the fact of the matter is that it's, you know, it's becoming the standard. It's going to be something that, you know, this event that we're doing is going to cost about a quarter of what it would have cost us to do it as an in-person event. Even, you know, we were fortunate with the hotel that we didn't lose, really lose any money on that hotel contract, which was pretty great because we had signed a pretty substantial contract with them. And if this goes well and we get a good audience and it works well, it's going to probably be a hard sell to say, let's go back to the old way of doing it, where it's going to cost us, you know, 10% of my annual marketing budget on one 2-day event. So.
Absolutely. So I think one of the things I like to wrap up with in these podcasts is we call this the next CMO for a couple of reasons. One is that we like to think that we talk about topics that the CMO of the future is interested in. But the other thing that we think we like is the idea that some of our audience is people who are not quite a CMO yet, but want to be. And I'd love your input, Frank, on what's your advice for those people who are earlier on their careers, any pearls of wisdom around what someone who's earlier in their career should think about if they want to be a CMO sometime in the future?
I tend to be more, you know, more the analytic flavor of marketing. If you look at my background, I have an MBA from MIT, so I'm a kind of an unusual MIT guy in that I have a liberal arts undergrad degree. But the fact of the matter is that the new marketer, at least the CMO, is being held way more accountable than ever before to the numbers and the performance of their team. So for me, in my career, has often been the success in my career has often been correlated with having a boss or a CEO who is really appreciative and respectful of the numbers and the ability to be able to connect the dots between activity and results. That's been pretty important. The other part is to hire good people. You know, I got great people like Rachel on my team, which has been, I've had a good track record of hiring smart people and kind of keep trying to keep them motivated and keep them focused and help them develop. You know, that's always been a key pitch that I have to the team, because we tend to hire a little bit under in terms of experience and skill level and try to grow them into the people that we want them to be. And I think that's a really valuable thing, because it provides a tremendous opportunity to people on your team, and it does engender a certain amount of loyalty in terms of, if they feel like they have a real opportunity, they're going to stick around. If they don't, they're going to fly away. So I don't know if that answers your question clearly, but
it does. That's fantastic advice. I agree 100% in what you're saying. I always like to hire people smarter than me. And the good news is that that's a pretty big set of people out there.
A big difference when you hire people like, you know, event here, this is Rachel's first year as the quote unquote executive producer, but you know, she checks with me on stuff, but most of the stuff just happens. And that's a tribute to her and the rest of the folks on the, having good people on the team who can make decisions and can work on the fly and are always pushing the action. And I'm really grateful for that.
Great.
That's great. I love to hear that. Last question, you know, before we wrap this up. So Enterprise DB customers or potential customers, you know, listening to this podcast, can they still sign up for the event?
Yes, it's open. So you'll want to go. The website is PostgreSVision, all one word, .com, PostgreSVision.com. You can register right there.
Perfect. Well, that's going to wrap it up for today's episode. Thank you so much, Rachel and Frank. It was such a pleasure talking to you today. Make sure to follow the Next CMO and Plana on Twitter and LinkedIn. If you have any ideas for topics or guests, you can email them to thenextcmo@plana.com. Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you again.
Thanks, Dr. Peter.